Watch the beauty. Okay. Stop. Bolsa.
Foreign direct investment to stimulate the economy, to David, on the land before, we know that the objective is that by 2040, 10% of agricultural land will be transferred. With the current growth of the economy and with the equity needed in the land reform transaction, are you of the opinion that our economy can afford transferring 10% of agricultural land by 2040? Because that we need a probably a 40% equity in those transactions. Thank you, sir. So I couldn't say thank you very much.
My first question goes to the solution. I agree with you that the European OECD comes to find a way on the area. I just want to adopt for you how much the people of people are given also given economic conditions that one of the environment is because of the economic much less well with much very easy. The other question is I just want to make two questions to make them. I just want your opinion on if it's your experience for the entire IDG. The successes and failures and how we can incorporate them into the five year sentences that we just and what we can talk about the future
We do appreciate the loan, you can see the loan at the top.
saying people must get up off the ground. Would you have the agency to put yourself on the firing line to say, if it were you, we're going to do that? You would do ABCD to ensure that these people get a voice. The third one, you talked about farmers, which must be brought up on board. You are helping these farmers now. What I would like to know, what sort of help do you give these farmers? And do you have farmers who are outside the land redistribution program? Or do you only concentrate on farmers who are on land redistribution program?
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with the last question. It is not very, very clear on the balance of view about the strategic number that people can go to ESCO. The minister is very, very silent so far. So we're confused whether it's going to be a loan coming from government to ESCO at a particular rate, or is it going to be part of the guarantee? If, for example, given the fact that the credit agency is very concerned about the capital structure of ESCO balance sheet, that the state will put it in the mechanism of making sure that it will get downgraded, or it should be still transferred to ESCO balance sheet. So I think you will see the information that we can share more here. On the ESCO loan credit package, really, I'm going to get this year. I think I still need some engagement with the treasurer to really verify to us what this loan credit package means. I'm not sure maybe I should do my comment on this one because it's not our issue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can get some good in the which would be one fault, but I think actually what would be based is the integrity injection. In the end, the government that is so shareholder in this company, you can get the benefit of that in terms of taking the higher dividends if you pay the government down the line, and that will put the lead pressure on this. So I think in particular, the way I see it is that the cost of servicing that should only kick in once the additional capacity starts producing the additional revenue. So this is the nature of it. In my mind, that is the bottom line that should be aimed for, and it's done by the finance.
Chair, on the issue of grants vis-à-vis investment, I think given the level of poverty in our country and marginalization, there is a case for giving grants as a short-term measure for people to survive, because we don't want to a situation whereby the poorest of the poor and marginalized cannot have play and children don't go to school. So there is a case for grants. However, the long-term strategy of our country should be making sure that we get the millions of our people, the 5.5% of the unemployed, to back to the labor market. How do we do that? This means a complete shift from the government perspective in terms of our policy outlook. Our policy outlook at the moment has said that the state will let everything be done by the market to try and create the human framework, and thereafter, through the regulatory system, we increase public expenditure. And seeing the past budget and the budget that I've been talking about today. The reality is that we're going to use an industrial policy tool where we said, given that we've had excess demand for quite a long time now, for the past 4 years, we've seen excess demand. How do we turn things local firm to support mechanism so that localized some of the production. Everyone of Africa is importing a lot of whether it's government, whether it's input or infrastructure investment in the past 4 years. We do it, we use local capabilities in traditional kinds. And then the industry can support from the state. That doesn't happen at all. So I think we need to really look long term by making sure that we strengthen firm capabilities. And one of the ways, one of our challenges, is that how do we strengthen those capabilities when the input costs are so huge in Africa? The cost of haulage and logistics are enormous. The state is only in those resources. I'm talking about Transnet radio, Transnet ports, etc. The input, the cost to business are enormous. Now we add on the energy cost that we talked about. We add on labor cost, including the labor scheme that we have to pay premium for some skills because we don't have that in South Africa. So the long-term plan that we should build in is a long-term plan that takes this equation into play because our long-term plan is to create a number of industries and firms that can compete globally. But the state has assisted them in helping that environment where we believe that the case, the cost of the risk that Mr. Fanning talked about can be proven. Another area is an economic experimentation, and then by doing this area. But there are now the peaceful for us in that area. So my argument around grants and investment is that we need to shift, we need to have an agenda, a long-term agenda. And we're seeing a lot of this coming in the budget around national policy. But I think we need to do more because as we've discussed here that in our tax revenue and GDP, we're still the reduced tax value. And I think some of that value could shift back to companies. Support that you do this thing. But in the long term, we start having a huge dent on unemployment. And that's how I think we could move on that one. On the farmers, the institution that supports farmers in our country is the land bank. The IDC plays a role in farmers that are export oriented. So we're looking what is farmers in this problem. We are teaching that in partnership with the premier. I'd like to be the cultural center, including things like abalone, etc. Because all these are key support for our own team. So the area where we work very well in them that is available for being returned to the former owners is that where is the business? For example, in our work with the Sabi, in our work with the Hansen Agency, we work with the community ourselves, Sabi, work together with the community, just to make sure that where the land is not, has not been touched yet, but on Sabi's hand, but it belongs to a community in Pumala, okay, then we work with the community to say to them, they can succeed in the investment, given the price, the fact that the price of food has more than over 100% in the past few years. That this community some bring them in a shareholder, with a beneficial in the community, and some supplies the plant, the tree that gets planted by the community. So the community plants this tree in itself, and the shareholder will then send it back to the community for groceries, for schools, for all the necessary requirements that the community wants. So those teams are working where they are potential of creating investment. But we only, as I said, we only looking at export-oriented horticulture, not fresh produce or maize or stock, livestock. That's the core business of them there. So we try to avoid that on the street. I think it's been a conflict that we are going to speak about the
Mine is a very simple one. I'm going to give you a few answers. I think the Eskom thing, we haven't got all the clarity, but if you're going to put 10 billion rand in the next give us the income, because otherwise we can't put some attack from the community that we don't want. Because we now have got an electricity crisis, so if you're going to tax us on the electricity, give the money to ESCOM straightforward. That's what we're going to do. Because that 10 billion is about half, or is half of the 20 billion that is being put in for ESCOM in the next 3 years. First of all, I would like to say that I think that the economists, we all understand that we have social concerns in this country. But what we would like to see is people getting from grants into work. I think that's what Cecilia just said and what the whole idea would be. And I think to get that situation going, we have to add an element of responsibility. So it would work like this, if you wish. You get the grants, but age 70 or 50 does not go to school, no more grants. And that adds a level of responsibility to it, because we know in the modern world, and we want to go forward as a country, and we want to partake in this modern world, we need an education. And education is already paid for by the state, by and large. So those are the things that we would like to see. And I think if you're going to look at education, why don't give people a real choice? Why don't give them vouchers? Then they can choose the schools, especially in the city areas, and then those schools that are not delivering will very quickly learn that they're going to run empty because the parents and the children are going to choose the school where they'll get the best results. The same thing can be applied to the health sector in a large way. I think we need, another thing that we need is we need more infrastructure expenditure, as I pointed out. If the government takes 28% of our expenditure in the economy, and if there's everybody who wants to reach 25% in infrastructure investment, a fixed investment, the GDP ratio, then it has to itself spend at 7%, not at 2%. So it has to then increase its infrastructure. And one of the things that we do is if we have an infrastructure investment plan and a plan with a vision of saying we are going to become a major exporter in the world, we're going to do this and that, and we have a real plan behind it, then we can make things work. Because at this moment in time, for example, there's a huge cost if your logistics, as Cecilia said, get locked up in traffic jams or robots that don't work, or we don't have electricity, or the water or sewage doesn't work. And that's where you can employ a lot of people in that type of plan and take them forward. I'm not suggesting that we should just have a sort of public work program, but that would be one of the ways that you could actually create work that would increase productivity of the economy as a whole. And that's what we basically saying. But it is unsustainable. The current situation with grants, you can't go into a situation where, you know, 26% of your population, and now we're going to have even more people as a percentage of the population. Probably we're going to turn over 30% of our population is going to be on some form of welfare benefit. There's no country in the world, no matter what anybody else says to you, where that is the situation. Quite frankly, that is just not sustainable. So we have to take people from grants into work. And the way that we do that is something that we should think about as to how we spend our money. And we as individuals here, we don't have all the answers, but there has to be an element of responsibility in the people receiving those grants. And that means that if they don't send their children to school, they don't make full use of their children going forward, then they should not be given those grants. That's just an example. You know, there's many other things that we can do and to get people into work, because you do need skills to get jobs these days. And if we look at our ratio of school leavers, as I showed you, you know, you can't go to a situation where less than 35% of an age group complete school. You know, emerging market countries have outperformed us there in every sense of the word. And that is something that we need to lift up. We lose more than half our learners before they get to matric, never mind matric results. And those are the type of things we should do. So if somebody leaves school, then why should they still get a child grant? That's just an idea of that.
I'm going to add a point of vision of the according to the budget review, government should be exactly looking at these things. There's the example, for example, in Mexico that was quite successful, taking grants that are conditional. And the issue of children attending school, that's specifically mentioned in the budget review already, so we're increasingly going to see African development using grants also to encourage the type of behavior that will in the end enable people to be more productive on their own and therefore not to be dependent on the grant. There's the other side of the equation, of course, also, that is on the people that actually find the grant. That's what I also mean by the sense that if you if you push it too far in the sense of the bigger disconnect between what people produce, what they earn, and the enjoyment of the fruits of their labor, then at some stage those people then might say, I don't get sufficient compensation for what I'm doing, for what I'm doing. And it's slightly general to the whole idea behind the redistribution, which I have said early on, which I have to think on the world that it should happen, but you should be careful that you don't push it too far. We're going to add substantial new component of redistribution when we introduce the national social security system. That's quite clear. And I'm in a world in which labor is mobile, and particularly skilled labor and highly qualified labor is highly mobile, then we will just be careful that we don't take it too far so that those people say, look, I can go and work elsewhere and enjoy a better percentage of the fruit of my labor. One of also the questions about the SDC. When the SDC was introduced, the then known president of the DEP said it shouldn't be not a tax on dividends, which I find strange because he keeps in the company started paying dividends. If you didn't pay dividends, you didn't pay SDC. So, insofar as the SDC has been replaced by holding tax on dividends, in my mind, one form of tax on dividends is being replaced by another tax on dividends. A much better tax on dividends that's much clearer and easier for people to understand, and there's more in line with what are these factors in that regard. So I think it's possible. I can only commit. The question regarding the potential guidelines and the bond market. Of course, we have the situation that bond rates are actually relatively high. If you compare it specifically with the developed world. So therefore, you get the same trade argument that's being put forward and that's supporting the land. The argument is that actually we are attacking the capital because our yields are higher than what people can spend elsewhere. So if you just turn that around, so why would somebody in South Africa, if you can earn 8.5% to 9% from the bond here, why would you send that money offshore to go and earn 4% or 4.5% elsewhere? You will have to take a negative view on the currency, and you will have to rely on the depreciation of the land to make it your worthwhile, and which would mean that you will have to accept additional risk. You will have to accept that currency risk. So therefore, when you talk about offshore investment under the Prudential Investment Guidelines, in general, we're talking about equity investment and not bond investment. One thing that I would say there is perhaps there can be additional demand for foreign bonds under the Prudential Investment Guidelines is that if we increasingly have a situation where there's actually a shortage of bonds in South Africa, we spoke about the decline in the government debt level that's going to continue to decline. So specifically, certain types of portfolios where you have to have good matching of assets and liabilities. You can have a situation where you can't get the appropriate assets in South Africa to match your liabilities. That might then force people to make more use of offshore assets.
Thank you. Chair, the IDC was in 1940. It's main mandate to develop industrial capabilities of South Africa. And as part of that, a lot of incentives were provided to the IDC and international groups to try and support these to able to have this issue in the last year. There were several questions then. One of them was the rent issue by company, where companies continue to be efficient on the back of this support through the incentive. So basically, the incentive supporting inefficiency on our company. And between 1990 and 1994, after the wild talks of trade and towards the formation of WTO, there was an agreement that we signed in South Africa that we're going to phase out tariffs and support in particular sectors of our economy. But what happened then was that the issue of supporting businesses through using state of candidates, which is like the ITC, slowly diminished to an extent. There were areas, I believe, where we should have basically removed tariffs, even what our computers are doing. We can go through that discussion length about whether we would pick to remove the tariffs or not. So, in consequence, is that in South Africa, given our industrial structure, we do have dominant companies which came in at the back of the IT investment, where because of creating local capability, we put money in partnerships with the state, companies such as Sasol, Axel Mittal, who are very dominant in that way to work. So as a consequence, that puts a lot of challenges for a country as small as ours in terms of how they pass in some of the time intended goods that they're talking about or intended tariffs that they pass on. Whether they pass it on a cost basis, they pass it on an import currency basis, they pass it on an export currency basis. It's a huge debate and an investigation that they decide which we have in partnership with this company to see whether some of the companies that were created by the state through the support mechanism are behaving correctly in support of other businesses, in the steel sector, and then as well as the plastic and chemical sector. So, in broadly, the incentive structure teaches some successes, as I said. These companies have talked about where the value of incentive and support by the state. So, they can be facing new niches where South Africa continues to be competitive. But without doing experiments, without playing a role together with the state, the IC state, and other departments, we're going to miss a huge opportunity. We miss a lot of opportunity between 94 and today in terms of those capabilities. A country like Brazil, through its own initiative, through its intervention, in terms of support industry, today has got an amazing aeronautical sector. Some of you members are familiar with a product called Embraer, which is an excellent product competing with the Airbus, with the Boeing of this world, coming from a developing world. So I'm saying that, you know, through this support, the areas where we're going to make some mistakes, the areas where we succeed and create new capabilities, new industries, and new opportunities for our people. Therefore, really, I'm thinking on this area that we work with the member support to bring back some of the support so that we can really have a space to experiment, to learn, and probably can be successful like the platform, like the accelerated talent as well, that will be able to bring back some of the support. In terms of the VET, the VET will be increased from 300 to 1 million for business in general. The threshold is increased from 300 to 1 million. The thing that businesses, even if they are paying over 100,000, they still need to register. They have to certificate from their own income or whatever. Something that, you know, they get their number, but they are exempted to some, which is not to start given the machine, some community. So that shouldn't bar them from competing in Kenya, because they have a great purpose. Right in 2018, you might say that's the thing that I'm doing there. Some of the things that are very easy, and then they can tender and get to you. On the last point around monetary policy and pragmatism, when they say, what we see, I mean, Jacques talked to the point, and here when I discuss engagement, what you saw post 2000, 2001 is a switch in global economy where commodity prices started rising. And as they were rising, in the financial services sector, we reached a milestone where we came out with a PE financial services chart. That chart can contribute that the bank can create around the right community, etc. So as we are experiencing a huge commodity boom in the late 2001 onwards, before the financial services sector, being driven by the agreement on the BE charter, being doing things that we never could do before, opening up putting ATMs in the township in one area because of the BE charter, lending to areas where the need for that land before. So what we see is that with an extension and a bringing into the formal sector of a lot of people who before would go to the Mashonica or the loan shark to borrow money, now coming to the formal sector through that intervention. And automatically we will bring new people that lead to high rise in demand for money. Because they would assess, they never had before, they would assess. In addition to that, the commodity boom, which led to people getting wealthier and the service sector growing. So what we've seen in 2001 and today is a huge annual change, particularly in the black community, where millions of people coming to the formal sector have access to banking facilities, have access to credit, leading to the credit demand. So that's one story. The other story is that when the first interest rate went up, there were three shocks. The first one is going to talk about around blacks coming in, into the formal sector because they access to formal borrowing. The second one is that there was a special change in the food sector where milk, other basics, shot up to one because there was excess demand and the prices went up. Lastly, the shock in Iraq and when the risk is around the corner. So these are three factors that have basically tended to be around on our inflation. So the governor of the MPC on the first shock, because that first statement was that the food price and the price and the energy prices, and we have led them to that. Keep in mind that on the same side, consumers have also extended themselves to higher levels of refugees, also for the country to GDP of about 67%. So the government used all these excuses to argue the thing. And we said to the team, government, the other two, we got no control. We talk about food prices and energy. The other one, let at last of his access to formal so this is a new tool that's coming in to the optional arm. So how you delay money, maybe this is another way of doing it. This is a development. So I'm still at odds on this point that pragmatism, if you understand where people are coming from, that the red line is like discrimination by financial sector, because you need to understand the black market. In terms of lending money, it's really never successful to credit at all. And then lastly, those who point around fewer and fewer, you will accept differently. But I think we accept the way we accept, and I just don't know whether through this behavior, we will not only push SMEs to this behavior, but to the energy challenge that SMEs are starting to maintain the job that they've covered in the past few years. Thank you very much.
Let's first check over there. There are three outstanding questions.
Yes.
I know there are many, but I still haven't come.
There's a question.
Yeah. But no, I'm actually checking with the family whether they're I think the fact of the matter is that we have got the fly-by shot in inflation. I'm just not sure that you cannot get interest rates to go higher qualitatively. Interest rates will have to go higher at some stage if the inflation shock continues, because otherwise the people that give money into the system are not going to have the incentive to do so. You don't put money into a bank and save to lose money, you save money to make money. And essentially I think inflation targeting is not the perfect system, because there are things like asymmetrical prices. And certainly I really think that inflation targeting is probably the best system at the moment that is available worldwide, although it's not perfect. And certainly we need to relook at the escape clauses, but otherwise I think inflation targeting, as Jacques Wise showed, has given us a lot more stability with real interest rates. And I think that's something that we should be pretty glad about.
Chair, I think that the first question perhaps might be answered, and that I couldn't get in there here, and I think you can ask the person raise his hand, and that's that.
Was that the one who was going to ask the
question?
Yes.
What exactly was the question?
Sure.
Say that I'm interested in some of these questions here. Our system, again, is my question. How are we taking that?
If we do have a shock, the shock would be in the form of the revenue protections not being met. And then if you did not have a surplus as a buffer, it would mean that perhaps you would have had to cut expenditure where you could. It's not easy to cut government expenditure. If you just think about the high expenditure numbers, then you, for example, goes on salaries and wages, to cut government expenditure without laying off people is extremely difficult. So, insofar as the shock would mean that you move from a budget surplus of, let's say, 0.5%, but more than 0.5% of GDP, you move to a deficit, on the other hand, then of maybe even 2% of GDP, that would give you a swing of, what would that be, about 50 billion rand swing that you could then absorb it. And you could do it. You know, having a budget deficit in a 2% of GDP, as far as I'm concerned, that would not be of any concern to anybody. You could explain it, you could justify it. So I think it could both certainly be effective. The only case that it's not be effective is we have a shock that is so huge for some other reason that comes out to a budget deficit of more than 3% of GDP. And, I can't see that what we have come from.
Another question that was really is around some of the infrastructure provision. What are the things can we provide them to say to whether it's vulnerable from public sector? Whether it's private public partnership or true print advertising. The issue here, I've got it, one group at the energy challenge is around cogeneration, where there's enormous take-up in the market. There's a lot of fear about the so-called independent power plant, for example, ICC, who was very keen to work in partnership with DESCOM around supplying the equipment. However, the increase that the Minister Cox to 70 kilowatts in RRE don't go far enough. I was expecting a huge increase. But the only way you're going to make sure that the cogenerator and the potential power comes into play is when the playing field is leveraged. And you can only be leveraged three hard challenges, and one that I will target, and the one that I talk about in the Department of Mineral and Energy. So therefore, the challenge, I think, that we need to think through is, do we want to take and create a monopoly in the state and continue having administered crime? Or do we want to take a big knock upfront to a shock, challenge to increase, so that we can level the playing field in the process, achieve cleaner and efficient energy sources or suppliers to come into the market? That is a broader policy challenge than supporting the COVID situation and other things. Because the people are in the top of the world. If we have got brave enough, we needed to have been using our bilateral relationships that we got in other countries, such as the Democratic Republic of Congo, for people to become challenges. However, it still fails with the most amazing resource in the continent of huge water supply that can be supplied for us to drink and enjoy, given the ugliness of our southern part of the continent, and also provide energy, which is renewable, than putting steep low running forward, and whatever only put it in an energy. So these are broader long-term strategic issues that need to be really considered and really do this thing with their economy, but also plan where to receive an African education strategy. And the contributor to cleaner environment towards the climatic change, making sure that the shock to our children is not as severe as we are. So the chances to go up are greater than that. That would be my view. So that then the production can come in. Then we have companies on the market, we have ICT for you, or other players for you, but also your information comes under and your other forms of community using a weight machine and other things become very vibrant as well. Thank you.
That's something that you can address. The fact that, you know,
in question, in fact, but it's a one-off. Once we get there, it's just very much like the kid has been saying about the actual economy, although there's not the economy, the electricity tariffs are going up. There's just one thing I'd like to warn about the electricity tariffs. It is also an indirect tax at this moment in time, and certainly the inflation impact of the tax combined with the tariffs going up is going to be about 1% of inflation if you take it as such. And, you know, that's for a 4% weighting in inflation rate. But I think we've learned the lesson in this last crisis that we're having is that we do need infrastructure investment, and we do need to, that to happen. And the point that we're trying to make is that there are costs. It's not going to help us as a society to bring down our cost of doing business to compete in the rest of the world if a large part of these infrastructures that we put together is going to be things like toll roads and things like that. We need the space to invest where the state should. And the state needs to invest in things like transport infrastructure, whether it's public transport that people can get around in, or whether it's public transport in the form of roads and cars, and whether it's infrastructure in telecommunications and stuff with the rest of the world, where our tariffs are still very, very high. We've got a small IT industry, for example, in this country that is busy competing quite well, and we can make that work. And those are the type of things. Businesses can compete, and small businesses can compete on that front. We will create jobs, and we have been creating jobs, but bring down the cost of a truck sitting at, or your people sitting at a robot that's not working, or electricity that's not working, or a car road that's just not full of potholes, and you find that people get out of their cars and you actually put it inside. Then, you know, those are the type of things we need to address with infrastructure spend, and we need to get the state to spend. Then if they want 28% of their expenditure and a quarter of the gym must go into infrastructure, and lift up from less than 2% to 7% of GDP infrastructure expenditure of the state. That's what we're saying. And if we do that because we lift indirect taxes, that's great. But then at the other time, other ends, we must bring down the company taxes slightly as well. We keep on lowering the cost of companies doing business in this country. Thank you.
So we basically, on a short ourselves on the food, now we're limiting because of that, of those poor policy alternatives. So therefore, how we move forward is that given the period, because under pressure, because of want to be a successful emerging market, want to attract FDI to a different market eventually, right? So very important for us that we create those capabilities locally. But the pressure that's too high. So what are you want to talk about? Whether it's a boiler and other capital things that we import there. But then only a bit of ourselves, the development industry, as well as the GP, are working together to devise a capital good strategy where we can engage federally to see of that 5 billion range. Can't get some of it to work with that new sector. Because that sector has got a lot of benefits across all other sectors in terms of capability and the spillover of positive personalities between the public service can be achieved by reading the quality of that sector. So, in the short period of time, we're going to be forced to import because other players, the business around the corner, the business that has once the power. So it's all this trade that affects the economy. But I think we need a little time to spend and create a platform. That's why I'm really calling for China to be part of the administration, or whatever. but also to be flexible around the 5 billion range. Because if you calculate using the state accounting and an analytical approach to it, we're gonna find out that in 2018, we're sitting here, we're all we're lamenting about the mistakes that we made in 2014. When in fact, we have taken the risk, the cost will be lower than the regime that will be done. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. There's a number of issues that have been brought up through this presentation. The first one on government investment in infrastructure. Now, I listened to your presentation, and on the one hand you're saying we should reduce the tax burden in South Africa. On the other hand, you're saying you're happy with the surplus that we have in South Africa at the moment, okay, which might be a structural deficit, but it's a cyclical surplus. The issue then is where is government getting the money to invest in infrastructure? What has to give? Are we saying something else needs to give in the budget? Or are we saying we should be using some of that cyclical surplus to actually spend on infrastructure? Because my argument would be that actually, yes, you don't want to use a cyclical surplus to spend on more grants and such, but you can spend it on infrastructure. Because that is things that are actually investing in the economy and investing in your infrastructure going forward. So I just want to hear your comments on that. In terms of actual expenditures as well, I agree with you wholeheartedly. We're not getting value for money on a whole range of issues, including education, and that's related to a number of different factors without a doubt. But what I've also found is that we come up with targets such as, every school will have electricity, and every school will have more sanitation within a year. I then go and sit in an education portfolio committee, and they come to me with the budget and they say, we cannot reach these targets because of the budget that's given to us here. What I've also heard from a district municipality in the Eastern Cape, one of the poorest municipalities, they say they want water and sanitation by 2008 to reach the Millennium Development Goal. That's going to cost 1.5 billion rand. We've only got 400 million to spend on it. So I think there is a bit of a disjuncture that's going on here about how much we actually allocate when it goes down onto the ground, whether we are given enough to meet these kind of lofty targets that we're putting out. And I think that is something we need to look at. Just in terms of the energy tariff, I completely disagree with you that we should take the 10 billion rand if you raise it from the 2 cents tariff on non-renewable energy and give it straight back to Eskom. That defeats the purpose of what that tariff is. And that tariff is supposed to be trying to invest that into renewable energy sources or away from a kind of fossil fuel future. So if we are going to give that 10 billion rand back to Eskom, then at least put a stipulation that we should use that to build a wind farm or to develop a wind industry or develop solar or something in this country. I don't see how we can just simply give it back because that's not purpose in doing that. In terms of your experimental side, I fully agree with you. I think the South Africa should be experimenting. I think that we do need an industrial policy that invests in critical sectors and that picks winners. The problem is, though, I think we pick losers. And this is and I think if we look at certain things that we picked, such as the Dell, which we pushed a lot of money into, and which we have not seen return for, and it hasn't integrated a lot of jobs. I would argue the same for TDMR, I know that other people might not, but I think if we're going to spend 6 billion rand on something, which should have actually got us out of the electricity crisis now, but we're only going to see it come on stream in 10 years' time. So the issue is, are we picking the winners? And this is the key. Are we looking at the future world, and are we actually picking the sectors where we can play? My argument would be, let's look at the renewable energy sector as well. The problem is that we're looking at, for instance, nuclear, where we don't have that many nuclear scientists in this country. And yes, we can create that, but we have a problem with scientists. Let's go and create a job where we have a skill for at this point. And let's actually look at things like running our solar water heaters, and let's look at solar panels and things like that, where we can create an industry around that. And that's where I'd like to see the money spent, and that's where I'd like to see us experiment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. And say very interesting, including the one on beauty at the least that you put on the chipper. But there are a couple of things I would like to ask the panel of folks. Everyone's talking about more money here at government should be using. It's almost a united approach that government isn't doing enough for infrastructure. Even the commodity who said that the world is from focus on
Thank you very much, sir. It's a nice to be with you. Look forward to engaging with you again.
make a follow-up on the education faculty of the citizen about the savings. I would like to know from our students how to make the decision to reach the ground, the majority of the people from the ground, given the fact that from the national set,
there is a lack of coordination of spending of the funds so that it can get to the people that really require it and that need the youth, to make them self-reliant. Now, what would your view be if, maybe under the office of the presidency, all the funds are put in there, and they coordinated and targeted intervention. We create a war room where we say, let us now develop the community, a particular section of the community. And you know, it happens from there. Because here you get self protection. Agriculture has got its grants, GDI has got its grants, IUC has got a lot of money there, some other department comes with its grants, and some more youth fund comes with their money, and everything gets rocked in the process. There's so much of red tape, there's so much of bureaucracy, but at the end of the day, very few people benefit. So I'd just like a view on more coordinated approach to grants and protection. And the other thing is, you know, I mean, there's an assessment that the budget loses confidence, and I saw that we can achieve that, yeah. Maybe that's from a business point of view, but from the view of the man in the street, the poor man, can we say the same thing? And my answer to that, I say from the view of the man in the street, but one of his assessments was that the budget loses confidence. I mean, maybe that statement applies to the business sector. But does it apply to the poor man in the street? Can the poor man in the street say today the budget loses confidence in him as a man living in Kwamashu or Togoda or whatever? Some problem.
Sorry,
you
know, the question
more assisting that somebody who is ready to be
said they both
taxation. You need companies to grow.
The UIF says if you look at the amount of firms that we had in South Africa from the 80s to now, and the amount of people that those formal sector firms employed, we've gone from about 35 people in the average firm to about 13 or less than that. So today, the firm that you're talking about is a small firm, depending on how you define small, obviously, but let's say at less than 20, you're talking the average firm employee now, is a small firm. And you need those guys to grow. And part of the problem isn't just the taxes that you put on these firms, but the amount of administration that goes into it. There's been another study by the Small Business Project, for example, which is a South African study that was done, I know where they are in Joburg, but it's called Small Firms, which shows that small firms spend 8 or 9% of their turnover on the actual administration of taxes, for example. So you want to simplify these things. You've got many other regulations. Let me give you an example of my own firm. I use work for chance. I used to work very late. Please come to the presentation about promoting prices, about where you should be looking for business. I was saying, I did it. Officers would say, wait, have you got GE requirements? I said, I don't have that type of thing. Many government departments have not paid me, but I pay taxes. That I'd like to pay before I get paid by this government. And therefore, I think, you know, if you look at that, you want to have the whole picture. We've got an expenditure side. And yet, what I am saying is that we need to spend focus less on the welfare and social security expenditure and more onto the infrastructure expenditure, because that's what you also have. And you need to realize that you cannot, in the long run, continuously spend 4.5% of your GDP, and that is by the budget figures worked out for the budget that the National Treasury provides us with. And on welfare funds, when we're not spending on infrastructure, because if the businesses are going to America built roads, and in the 50s they lowered the cost of doing business with 31% by just building enough roads, and we don't do that, our roads are flooded. In Joburg and in Cape Town, when I come here, the roads are flooded. You have seen normal families, because people have to get up ever earlier to go to work, and people are starting to think, but why do I want to be here when I'm spending 8 days at work, 8 hours at work plus another 4 hours in traffic jam? So I think we have to start thinking about what we're going to do. And these are the critical shifts that we've got to have. We've got to have critical shifts in the amount of money that we collect by direct taxes. And yes, businesses are the ones that want the tax break. But businesses are also people taking risks. And you need to provide risk takers with rewards. And that is what it's about. If you don't, then you will not create a job. About structural unemployment, if we just get there, start talking where the money comes from, changing the tax mix, plus changing the spending mix as such. Plus, Mr. Rocha pointed out that for long-term infrastructure, you can go and borrow because it makes sense. And I'm sure on that point, Mr. McHugh, Monday will also agree. And how is this asset for the poor? The actual reference is the South African, if you wish, the South African part of this is the household survey that we do every year from Saturday. The other data comes from the household survey from other countries, and it's in a database, I'm not quite sure where. I will get you the reference, I'll send it to Bradley. But it's the one of the UN agencies, and I can guarantee you that that's correct. Other thing is, do I know any country which has turned things around? Well, yes, many countries have turned things around. If we go back to East Asia, for example, and we take a country like the Philippines, and even Indonesia, they were poorer than Ghana. And today they are much, much richer, and they turned around their whole situation. If you have bad teachers, then you have to make a political decision somewhere to get rid of the bad teachers. You cannot keep the bad teachers in the system the whole time because you're playing with somebody else's future, if that were the case. So then you have to get rid of bad teachers. Those are hard political leadership factors you have to take into account. The deficit, which country, let's put it this way. You know, in some of the international stuff, like the polls, which is done by Paul can throw the reading and literature thing, and in terms of the mathematics and science, those things are done on an international basis in people's own language. How can a country that is much poorer, like Ghana, outperform our children? How come? Do they not have, you know, it's not a question of money, it's a question of our teachers having such an influence that we are now being outperformed by much poorer countries. So you have to ask yourself that question when, you know, have we really turned that situation around? In one a country, I can't give you a specific one on each one, but I can tell you that many countries around the world have steadily increased the amount of people that have come out of their schooling. And we have done this too. We have had some success. Let's not make this. But when we are struggling, it's on the specialization side of our skills. And many other countries are certainly, I think, doing it with much less money than we are. Because there's teachers involved, there's many other things, and I don't want to blame anybody specific. But certainly, if you look at the emerging markets, and you compare that to the early 1980s, they did not have those sort of skills. They were, in many cases, probably worse off than South Africa. And they have, yes, you know, 30 years or so on, they look at a totally different thing. And I think that's something that we should study. I can't give you all the answers in one go. But the fact of the matter is, if we don't get the skills, then we are going to struggle. And you said, our small companies are not competitive. Well, I think they are. You know, I'm a small company and I get international contracts. And, you know, from clients all over the place. And quite frankly, if small companies aren't a competitor, you know, we've still got lowish building costs. That man is lucky in keeping our building costs to a large extent in international terms down. But where we do have a problem is that we're adding costs onto them that they need not have. And a lot of those costs are not taxes, but administration. And I can tell you now, I'm trying to be surveyed for the man on his back. I'm sure he's going to be much more successful than me if you put a girl with a mini skirt there, I'll answer questions to her. But one thing that gets very clear is they stay underneath the radar because they are very scared of all the regulations that strangle them up. And I'm talking of all races. I've talked to the Director Business Executive Council. The same thing comes up again and again from micro and small business. All races, all across, is that they're scared of all these regulations. So that's where we've got to simplify things. In the manner that they pay taxes, in many other ways, I can't give all the answers, but I can tell you as a small business myself, it gets frightening, you know, you hear these people phoning from the SARS office, and the SARS office says, look, we won't phone you and ask you for bank details. But there are people that use the situation with small business as well. But I think our small business in general is pretty competitive, otherwise they would not survive. They do not get subsidies from the state, generally speaking. They are out there struggling every day. And we struggle with things like skills. We struggle to get those things. So we would like a system whereby we can get better skills out of the government system, which is something we believe government should do. And I'm really, you know, on the ground level, telling you that a lot of people, a lot of small businesses, might be flying by the bottom of their teeth. But they somehow survive despite all the regulation, despite all the hassles that they get. And in many cases, you know, when people realize you're a small business, they want bribes in the process as well. And that is unfortunate. That's why one of the reasons I think we should take away a lot of these regulations on them to get away from that. The exchange control, I'll leave to my friend from Kiri here. I like that thing of the turf protection, that one has a more coordinating function. I agree with you. Big business does not create jobs. I'm sure they do, but I think business in general, whether it's small, medium, and so on, would be able to create more jobs if we didn't have half the hassle of getting the skills, half the hassle of not having, you know, having to deal with administrative problems. And I think we would like to say that I believe in this country. I'm a patriot. You ask a patriotic question, I'll give it in this sense the answer. We would committee, we didn't believe in this country. That's as simple as it gets. And to be quite honest and to be forthright, you're offering yourself in the firing line. But I think business as such will create a job. There are parts of our structure and unemployment which is difficult to see how you're going to take people that don't have those skills into a business situation all the time. So it is difficult. The redistribution of growth, let's just put it this way, it shouldn't really be an argument. Growth should come first, because if we have proper growth and that growth happens, it will be distributed to everyone. We are a much more fairer society now than we are. You know, I think the strategy for business should be in general. I think what I'm saying is that the administrative problems for small business is very often more of a hassle than the actual taxes that you pay. Because it becomes a problem getting money in from your client, and then the taxman is already there in place, I want the bank now. And you've got a cash flow problem to take care of. You know, and then you've got the employee who's saying to you, but you don't have this sign up about an employment regulation. I can take you to court. You know, quite frankly, I'm providing a job. And I'm paying a salary, and I'm paying a decent salary. And all the time, sometimes the world feels like it's crashing in on you when people just come with everything. I am a patriot. I'll leave the inflation crisis in the system and inflation targeting to the people. Thank you.
In the 80s, when I was a student at university, there was, I think it was Lenin, what he said that developed countries are a mirror of where developing countries will be at some time in the future. And as a student, there was a lot of pessimism of whether developing countries would ever be where developed countries are today. Until the information is up to in the global economy that there were countries in Asia that the image being led by the state and developed countries, these countries were given a term in the 80s called newly industrialized countries, the so-called mixed. These countries in the 60s, my colleague said, in the 60s, they were at the same, they were far poorer than the Ghana, in those days. Ghana and other many African countries were far inferior. But they took upon themselves that they invest, which is they invest in that people, in human capital, making sure that they pick up that up among the people, they put money in industry, so that they can create local capabilities and the rest is history. So what I'm saying is that there's a lot to learn from South Africa. That's why I said that South Africa in 1994, in democratized, it has already developed to an extent. But they stay for us to catch up. The other countries call us very, very far. But what that means is we must be bold and take risks. I agree that teaching winners is very, very difficult, but not knowing who the winners are, etc. Doesn't mean that must follow arms and be skeptical that in whatever initiative or catching up, you shouldn't take the risk. Let's take the risk. The question is, let's bold when the risk adaptation is not paying off. Let's get out as quickly as possible and admit that this is not right. So I'm saying that the experimental opportunities that I'm talking about must be blighted by the fact that in many cases we've been wrong in the past few years. It tells us that when many mistakes have come out and have been like that was a mistake. But that's the experimental, that people, that people, the needs have shown. Taiwan, Malaysia, which has more similar problems than us, where the Chinese people are more dominant than the indigenous Malay people, and today the corruption to better the so it can be done in South Africa. But boldness, risk taking, speaking winners, and knowing that when you lose, you get out, you go and support the successful. On the issue of capitalism, my colleague might around the psychology. He touched on it with me, talking about using the escape door. Most of the members probably have seen the letter to the governor of the letter, which does talk to the escape door. But not even one has the governor ever talked about it. I don't know. But then, if I'm not going to talk about it, but much of it, that issue to cognizance, the interest of South Africa. What we see in many cases when these policies are talked about, it's an interest of a black sector. It's not an interest of a broader South Africa. Like, you know, we know that we tend to think that we know what we are doing. Therefore, we push any policy. So we need a time to very sensitive that this kind of power is at this early stage of development. There are a lot of things that we don't know as economists that we cannot explain, for example, how the fastest growth that we've seen in the past 4 years has really touched so few people and why they didn't touch a lot of people who is not living and become worse than Norway since the end of the last century. We cannot say why, because one thing that when there's too much growth, when the growth has been seen, it would have picked up through across the nation. But it hasn't. But we know that South Africa has come forward.
I just want to point out something. You know, if you look at cell phones, for example, 90% of the population today has cell phones or even Vodacom. And if you look at some of these numbers, and certainly, you know, some of that welfare expenditure is ending up in cell phones. So in certain aspects, we are seeing a lot of spreading of wealth. It doesn't mean it's everywhere. It doesn't But, you know, the other thing is that it makes it difficult being chronic when your last census that you had was in 2001. Yes, we had our household survey, but we needed a 5-year census so we could see what was happening. But we have household surveys, and what we do know is that the amount of people, you know, you asked another reference, the number of houses, the 3.4 million comes from the Department of Housing and the private sector houses. If you combine them, you get that from the stats they say. So we built a heck of a lot of houses, and certainly, you know, a lot of people have benefited from that. Nobody's disputing that point. And I think that we've come quite far, but where I really think we haven't always come as far as we could is probably in that sort of education arena, bringing those skills that we need for the modern economy. And I think also creating jobs. I think that's what we're all saying. We need to get a system going in this country. Business unusual, yes. But we want more jobs in that business unusual than we want more people on welfare grants. So I think that's the other end of the summary is where the economists are the dream achieved.
Okay, that's
another
point. The members of the institution around saving and watching through an institution called the Saving Institute of South Africa, where together, particularly with the Life Assistance Association, those are the retirement company, Standard Financial, etc., where we form this institution. At the moment, this is being supported by us, the IEC, but we've never seen anything coming to the country as well as the Minister of Finance to invest them, would be that saving to be the core of us as an issue. Some of it is running a supply, but a teaching where we can be able to strengthen our returns. Every September was a saving issue, where we get a lot of publicity, but it ends there. So we would like to make it a daily message to our people through using radio and other means, but we can only do that if the Treasury and the Minister of Finance are behind the whole campaign so that we can succeed in the of people, making sure that they save more money. We have to stop trying to do an excellent job in terms of savings, but we can do more in the of those that don't even belong to stop trying, that don't even save at all, because they never accept the question of services, or they are not organized that are collecting into stop trying. Okay, on that point around Forex, we believe that the minister is a country party, we think that it's very good for South African companies, that it's very good for us as individuals, but also, you know, if you relax your change control, we get questioned that way that doesn't have seen. Right? If your government is so positive about its own economy, why does it put restrictions to people and its companies in moving capital? Now that has come to an end, we're going to move from control to financial regulation. It's a message that Mr. Marshall has highlighted earlier, that it's a remarkable message of coming to make it investor, the frame investor, that we believe in the economy, but very optimistic that we're going to continue on our positive economic growth, and through them playing a role in our economy, we can actually double this growth by 2010 going forward, and make sure that we create those jobs as often as we can, and our infrastructure is strengthened through the investment that we talked about, and we continue to use our foundation and achieve higher levels than the needs that we've done in the past. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, how I wish we had more time for this. I know the department is very good. I'm having a conversation with a lot of computer innovation in the past. But unfortunately, coming into a lot of things, unlimited questions, so I can try to do what we do with the time. But I'm not sure we're going to have something for the end here, but it's got to the time constraint. And those people who are preparing for the very good time out of the house, but I don't know the decision of where we are. I would not say thank you very much. Very useful. It would be good to have more time for you. But I thought I would stop there and say something.
Perhaps we should have it. What we're saying is perhaps we should have it because if you've got unusual circumstances, then that's what you use the exceptional for. That's all that we're saying. You know, we've got this very high oil price, for example, and people then use these things.
Thank you very much,
Chair.
We'll see you in the next